What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome in to another episode of the Triple Play Fantasy Baseball Show, a proud member of Underdog and the Underdog Fantasy family. And if you go over at underdogfantasy.com and you enter promo code triple, they will match your deposit up to $100. So $100 to win $100, $50 to win $50. Fantasy baseball drafts are going on. So if you have not signed up, you basically get free money to draft with right before the season starts. It's a great, great thing you can do over there. Again, promo code triple. They'll double your first deposit. We got a fun bonus episode for you guys this week. And to be honest with you, we talk all this stuff about the season coming up, all the fun of redraft, all the fun of spring training. But I think who's having the most fun looking at all this spring training action is people that do dynasty leagues, because you can see players' values rise and fall with what's going on in spring training and the changes the players have made over the winter. And I wanted to bring you guys two faces tonight that maybe not have been on podcasts before, but they are very, very knowledgeable dynasty fantasy baseball analysts here. So first, the guy I'm going to bring on here, he is the PitchCon winner of the Triple Play Fantasy podcast appearance. He might be the number one superior team in dynasty fantasy baseball. This guy was on a baseball travel team with Jason Wirth. He was in a dynasty keeper league for 10 years. Unfortunately, the league just folded, but again, the roster was absolutely stacked. He's been playing fantasy baseball for 15 years, and he's a pretty handsome guy, if I have to say so myself. Lance is in the house tonight. What's going on, buddy?
I'll send you that Venmo for the $20 about the handsome comment as soon as this podcast is over. No problem. I'm good, man. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on, man. Again, right from the start, just being able to chat before the show, I can tell you're passionate about it. I can tell you're knowledgeable about it. And again, it's just going to be an easy, I think, listen for everybody that's going to tune in to hear your thoughts about the fun dynasty topic that we're covering tonight. The other end of the pod, we have my neighbor, a good friend of mine here. He's been playing dynasty fantasy baseball for 20 years, and he's been in the league that he's been in, I believe he said, for the last 10 years. His roster also extremely stacked. If you like young prospects that are on the rise, he's got them on his roster. This guy knows fantasy baseball as much as anybody I know. Matt is in the house tonight. What's going on, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Good to see you guys.
You too, man. Well, without further ado, let's dive into what this show is designed to be about. And I've heard a lot over the last few months, just people overdoing the dynasty leagues. You get excited, the fantasy baseball season ends, and people want to do fantasy baseball stuff once the season's over. So they start joining dynasty leagues. Before they know it, they've overcommitted. Maybe it's financially, maybe it's time-wise. They can't commit the time they thought they could. Maybe their team isn't as good as they thought it would be, and they just don't want to deal with it. So people leave leagues. Leagues are folding. And I think it's a problem that too many dynasty leagues are facing these days. So our goal tonight with you two on is to basically how to run a successful dynasty league, how you can get a dynasty league to run 10, 20, however many years down the road, where you'll have a solid group of guys that you can trust and you can basically build the team that you want to build and have success doing it. So we've prepared just kind of a rundown, I feel like, of the most important topics when running a successful dynasty league. So let's kick things off here with the first topic I want to run down here. Before we do that, I do have to ask, because I kind of touched over it, Lance, in the intro. You played baseball with Jason Wirth. That's pretty nuts.
Yeah. So actually, I don't know if you know his background, but his grandpa was Dick Schofield Sr. that played for the Cardinals, one of the first bonus babies. And then Dick Schofield Jr. that played for the Angels was his uncle, basically. So like we were around them growing up. And then Dennis Wirth was his stepdad who played for the Yankees. That was our coach when we were growing up. So it was pretty cool.
Was he just outwardly just way better than everybody and it wasn't even close?
I think he had it. It's hard to say. Like the way I would explain it is when you have somebody that's played pro baseball can teach you the things that you really need to know to be successful and correct the things that are wrong. I think that helped him a lot, but he always had the drive. I mean, everything athletic wise in his family is just geared for that. His mom would help him whatever he needed to do. I mean, he worked hard to get where he was. So, yeah.
That's pretty awesome, though. The fact to play baseball, Jason Wirth, that is really cool. All right, let's get into the rundown tonight. The first question I have for you guys, and Matt, I'm going to start with you. The most important aspect of a dynasty league is what?
There's so many, of course, but if we're going to go with the most, in my opinion, it's a combination of relationships, fairness, and some sort of ironclad constitution. It kind of, you know, a lot of my answers are probably going to be, you know, it depends. It really does depend on the type of people you have in the league. But at the end of the day, I think keeping it as fair as possible and having open lines of communication is going to be, I think, the best way to keep a league going. You're always going to have bumps in the road, but, you know, making sure that that constitution and the rules are set, there's no discrepancies. And if there are discrepancies, make sure in the constitution that you have a way to settle those discrepancies, because that's the easiest way to lose people is to have something happen where someone's upset. And then even if it's one person who leaves, it could cause a whole league to fold.
Do you, Matt, think that it's important that you know everybody that's in the dynasty league, like not joining with a bunch of random people, but having an idea of who everybody is, or is that not as important?
I'm going to say it's not as important. I think it has value, but in my own experience, you know, the league I'm in, it's only 10 people, but we have never, when I say we, me and my co-owner, who's my best friend who I've met before, obviously, we've never met the other 9 people in this mm-hmm. league. We kind of found this league through a guy sort of a situation. And it's been 10 years. And at the end of the day, the communication's pretty solid. The fairness is there. So it makes it easy to continue onward without too many hiccups.
So just having a clear layout, like you said, a constitution of basically, hey, any scenario that comes up, we're prepared for it. We've thought out all the different things that can happen. And so there's going to be no discrepancy when an issue arises, because it's basically laid out for you to where there's not going to be any bickering when it comes to that stuff. I think that's a pretty valid and good rule to have. Obviously, I think if someone's upset about a rule and it's not in place, that is an easy way to leave a dynasty league. So I like that answer. What about you, Lance?
I go with what he said. Fairness, in my opinion, is the one thing that if it's not there, people just start leaving the league. You know, it could be you're a bottom dweller, but you're going to get the 10th pick in the draft. Like, how are you going to get better for the most part? You know, you can't mm-hmm. just go, we got a 40-man roster and we're keeping 38. Good luck. Like, there's going to be nothing on the prospect list to go out and get better with. I know I originally took it as a loaded question of like, how do you be successful in it? I was going to talk about prospects, but if you're talking about running the league, I mean, some of it too is like, you know, I feel like you need to talk about any changes you're going to do for the next season, maybe in the middle of the previous one. Cause we had an issue where they were like, we're going to change from average and jump to OBP. Well, that's going to value and devalue players quite mm-hmm. a bit based on what you're doing. If you do it at the end of the year, that guy that was killing it on average now might be screwed. I mean, it should translate to OBP in a way, but it could be like saves holds, right? We were just doing saves. We went to saves holds. Well, if somebody had 3 backups, they're already ahead of the game for holds for the most part. And it changes that category completely. So I don't know. I just feel like it needs to be talked ahead of time and not just like a willy nilly. We jumped on it week of and decided to change it, unless it's, you know, 10 people all go, yeah, we agree. This is messed up.
And I do like that you preface that it's during the season before you would change it. So it's not like happening right before the season. It's not last minute. People are well aware of something that's going to take place well before it does. I think that kind of getting it out there is important. Yeah. You did touch on something that was going to be a little bit later on that, but we can tie it in right into this discussion. You talked about someone that has a bad team and then gets the 10th pick in the draft. What is your rule on tanking, Lance? If someone decides to tank, do you reward them with a high pick if they're outwardly tanking? Is there a rule in terms of you have to play a legal roster? What are your thoughts in terms of guarding against someone that's outwardly losing just to get the top picks?
I guess some way you insulate that yourself based on the number of keepers you have in Dynasty, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not going to pull a Yordan Alvarez or a Corbin Carroll in a draft if you have a first pick, if you've got a decent roster size of keepers. In tanking, it really depends on what you're talking about for tanking, right? Like if I know my team's crap and I'm going to finish dead last, I'm going to go get prospects maybe that aren't up for this year and play for next, but I still feel they need to set their roster every day. If you're not going out and setting your roster every day in a daily, that's crap, because that could totally change who gets number one seed in the playoffs, or, you know, they could I hated that. I'm fine with somebody tanking once I know they're completely out of the playoffs, in my opinion. If they want to just start dropping people and moving on to next year, that's cool. But at least set your roster, at least.
So that's the one rule. As long as they have a legal lineup, it doesn't matter who they have in, but that's the one caveat for you.
I mean, we always play devil's advocate because you could have somebody that's just an asshole, pardon my French, and just pulling players to just lose on purpose, right? But at least play like who you've got for your keepers. They should be in your lineup for the most part. So,
Matt, what are your thoughts on tanking?
Yeah, I mostly agree there. I'm fine with someone tanking / rebuilding, knowing that they're not going to try and win in a particular year. Setting their lineup, I think, is important to the best of their ability in terms of active players. Depending on the league and roster size, you know, they may be able to accomplish that. They may not. You would hope they would be. At the end of the day, like, they're paying their fee. As long as they're not pulling any funny business, I feel like they have the right to run their team the way they want. Again, as long as it's not really changing, I guess, like, the integrity of the league, because it does affect the other teams that they're competing against. Mm-hmm. I kind of just say, like, all right, they're donating their money to the league that year, and that's their choice to try and win in future years.
Yeah.
I like that. So I think we're, again, on the same page in terms of tanking, what should be allowed, and how people should go about it. But I guess the one thing with tanking is maybe someone's not trying to tank, but they're just losing a lot. Or in Matt's case, his team keeps winning. And the goal here is, how do you keep people interested? If the same person is winning 3 out of 4 years or 4 out of 6 years, and you feel like, why am I even playing? How do you keep people interested? Or if it's kind of like where there's no flair to the league, what can you do to your dynasty league to make people excited to check the message board, or to keep, you know, a group me or Slack or whatever you have, or the chat is buzzing and people are talking trash? What can you do to make your league more interesting? Matt, I've talked to you about this a couple of weeks ago, and I thought you had some really good answers for this.
Yeah. I mean, I would call them like smaller things. Like you said, message boards, like, I don't know. I came up with an idea where in the off season, you know, you have like a winter meetings period where it's really nothing. It's just like an email saying like, hey, you know, like, we're stuck in winter. You know, if you got any players you're looking to move, so on and so forth, like, let's open trading. We haven't done it, but like, an idea would be doing like a daily recap or a weekly recap, player of the week, dud of the week, things of that nature. Something's more impactful. As much as I don't like it, I'm not a big head-to-head guy, but that is what the league I'm in is, head-to-head. I like Roto better, but head-to-head does create, in my opinion, more of a chance for other teams to win on a weekly basis. You have a hot week, you have a cold week. So especially come playoff time, anything goes. So if someone dominates the regular season, there's teams in there in the playoffs that can sneak by, and maybe they feel good about, you know, knocking the number one seed out. That's how I would kind of approach it.
Do you guys, are you on board with the sense of, should there be a trophy for first place? Like, I know some leagues have been taking a portion of the buy-in every year, whether it's, but, you know, getting a trophy and then every year you get a little bit engraved to kind of like that appeal to it. Is that something that you feel is a good thing to add, or kind of unnecessary?
Depends. We don't have one. The money's good.
You know? Cash talks.
Yeah.
I mean, spend it on what I want.
Yeah. I think if it's a league of friends where maybe you see people and you maybe even draft live together, or you live close within the same vicinity, you know, like, that's kind of cool to have. But I don't know, like, I'm pretty much with strangers, and I don't really think it holds too much value. Lance, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could care less about a trophy. We've all played sports. Like, I just want to win. That's the prize for me. I can talk enough smack that I won first place. So who cares about a trophy? Like, whatever. It's just an added expense. So, yeah. And I would say money for me is kind of keeping people interested. But there's like that fine line, right? You don't want it to be too high that somebody's just like, especially for a dynasty league where they're like, my team's crap, I'm not going to keep throwing in $250 a year just donating my money, you know? So, and I do agree with your comment about head-to-head versus Roto. I think the best teams are going to win in Roto. If you've got the best roster, you're going to win. But head-to-head is just, to me, more fun during the season because it's against that guy for a week. And when that's over, you just move on to the next one. You've got a chance there. The only thing that sucks for head-to-head is, like you said, you get to the playoffs, you can have a fantastic team. But if you have your league set where it goes to the end of the regular season, you introduce all that chaos of, oh, this team's in the playoffs already and they're sitting their studs. And then any of those teams that are fourth, fifth, sixth place that get into the playoffs can win. I mean, and to me, that's getting people interested. I mean, it's just how it falls. So,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to comment. Yeah, that's a good point you make about going to the last week of the season. Our league in particular, we don't do that. We make sure we end at least a week, 2 weeks, depends, before the regular season actually finishes, so you don't have that funny business, if you will, that chaos at the end. And then the other point about the playoffs. So in our league in particular, I'll keep just referencing the league because of my experience, but the majority of the winnings goes to the regular season winner, which I think is a cool way to do it because it does kind of reward that team that had the most sustained success. And in the playoffs, if you do win, then you do get a fair amount of the pay in, but not the largest portion. So I think that also is fair in terms of rewarding the team that did it all season, but then also rewarding the team that got hot at the right time.
Yeah, we split it up a little bit that the regular season got something. You're right. Like, it takes forever to grind out to get that first place for the whole season. And to just be like, well, you lost in the playoffs, so you get nothing, that would suck for a league. I don't know that I'd really want to be part of that.
Absolutely.
That's a good point. And I know in the fantasy football world, that doesn't happen enough. It's always based on the – fantasy football is all head-to-head. And
fantasy football, though, you set your lineup once a week. Like, in my head-to-head, it's a daily yep. league, right? When you're setting it once a week, there's not much of a time sink there. It's, oh, is this guy hurt? Okay, I got to pull in my extra wide receiver that I have or maybe hope I get somebody on the waiver wire. But it's not like waiver wire for baseball based on rosters where you can find a decent replacement outfielder maybe to plug in there. Try to find a first-string running back in fantasy football to put in if your guy goes down for the season. It's not going to happen. Like, you're
hard. It's very hard. 2 points also on this topic I want to add. I don't know if you guys have ever done this. What about like the weekly, the highest score if you do points or if you do categories, whoever had the most categories won of all the matchups, they get a weekly prize. Is that something you think would be good or is that too much? Like $10 or something?
I'd hate to manage that. It would be hard like to keep track of that every week. Like, I'm already keeping track of my roster and whatever people are doing for moves. I don't know that I'd want to keep track of this guy got an extra $10 a week.
So you basically would have, you'd have to basically, like write it down or like have it on your phone, like the notes, like, or like that's, I commission a football league where we do a $10 weekly high score. And then I just, at the end of the year, I just go through the weeks and just add them up. And then I'm like, I basically say like, all right, $10 for this week. And then I send it out. But yeah, it is a little extra work, but that also ties into my other question on this topic. Should the commissioner get some type of payout? You know, whatever percentage or dollar amount, you know, would be to that discretion, but is with all that goes into commissioning a dynasty league, should the commissioner get some type of some type of access to any type of money? What do you guys think?
I wouldn't. I'm playing it because I want to have fun, talk with other people about baseball. I'm not in it to make money. And to me, I think that would kind of sour some people. Oh, well, this guy gets an extra 25, 50 bucks or whatever it is. Like, no thanks.
Especially with all the work that you have to put in, you know, if there's a conflict, you're the one that's involved. You know, if you're making the rules, if I know Matt had mentioned again, like doing things like putting like the hottest hitter of the week or, you know, cold, like, you know, doing extra things like that, which I know you don't have to do, but it's almost kind of like your league mates are tipping you in a sense of like, hey, we know you're putting in the extra work. Here's $5 from each of us for the season for all the extra work that you're doing.
Yeah, I would say it's a labor of love. Like, I co-commission the league I'm in. I would never suggest asking for money. However, if the rest of the owners felt that the experience that they had was so great that they felt like chipping in a little bit, okay, like, I could see that. But I don't think I would ever go out of my way to be like, you know, guys, like, I really put some time into this. I would probably tell them first. I would probably say, hey, guys, just so you know, like, this is taking X amount of time out of my week, month, whatever it is. Like, can we cut back on certain things, or what do you think about? I would never suggest it. I can't suggest taking money. It would have to be on them.
I would only take money if it's something I hated to do, and I love to play fantasy baseball. So right. I could care less if I get a dollar out of it, like whatever.
Labor of love. Yep, for sure.
I like it. I like it. Let's move to the next question then. And Lance, I'll start with you here. How do you determine if your roster is a win now, or do you play for the future?
I guess for me personally, I'm looking to see if I'm going to make the playoffs, especially in head-to-head. If I don't think I'm going to get in the playoffs this year, it's probably time to start moving some of those vets off and trying to get young for the next year and hope that, you know, they come up and at least play. That's for me at least. But again, I wouldn't tank until I 100% knew I was out of the playoffs, especially in head-to-head, as we've talked, like anything can happen. I can beat a number one seed because maybe his stud starting pitchers are only throwing once that week and mine are throwing twice. Like, just get me to the playoffs. That's all I want.
What do you think, Matt?
Yeah. When I started in this league 10 years ago, I think we started from the bottom, me and my co-owner, and we had three years where we didn't make the playoffs. We were building, slowly building. The real cool thing about this particular league is, depending on how your draft goes and whatnot, you can keep players forever. So you can really build if you do it right and you know what you're looking for. So since then, I've been able to win a fair amount, which is nice, of course. In terms of rebuilding, I just don't want to be stuck in the middle. It's either like I want to be at the top in that regular season to get that regular season prize, like I was saying, or I'm going to rip it down and then try and build it back up to have sustained success at that top level. I don't want to be middling. If your league favors a prize for the playoffs heavily over the regular season, then maybe, like Lance is saying, you kind of, if you can sneak into the playoffs and make a run, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree with what he's saying now, too, because I haven't been in a league where it's more money for the regular season. But I see his side of it, that if there was more money for the regular season, then I guess I'm going to scrap the one about the playoffs and probably try to go for that number one overall. So, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt. I was just going to say, yeah, the way me and my co-owner treat it is let's win the regular season. And if we win the playoffs, that's like cherry on top, because anything can go. You know, the playoffs is only 2 weeks. So if we win the regular season, it's a success, and any added bonus is just the playoffs.
So let's say six teams get in the playoffs. You finish seventh or eighth. Then the next year you finish seventh or eighth. How many years in a row would you have to kind of finish in the middle before you'd be like, I'm just full on rebuilding?
The first year, seven or eight, I'm done. I'm scorched earth. They're gone.
So you're basically like, if 1 year in the middle, that's it for me. I know I'm not contending for a title. I'm resetting the reset button.
I think so. Yeah. When I started my league, my team sucked and I built from there. I just tried to prey on teams' weaknesses of not listening to podcasts or doing studying for Dynasty on who's the up and coming guy or who's starting to kind of fade a little bit.
Yeah. It's interesting how you said it, because my question was going to be, are you talking about if you're stuck in the middle, coming down from being good or trying to get to the top level?
Yeah, two different scenarios.
I guess in both senses, I guess it's almost self-explanatory. If you're from the top and coming down, you're probably, all right, I'm just going to abandon ship, get sell everybody off. But if you're on the rise, you're probably like, all right, well, I'm in the middle of this year, next year,
right?
I should make that leap, right?
Yeah. I haven't had to come down from the top and figure out when to rebuild. Like I said, it took a good few years. I donated my money, if you will, and then we built it up to have sustained success. So at some point, I know it will run out unless we really keep drafting the right way, but it'll be interesting. Sometimes I almost want to like rebuild the team, you know, because it's fun. You get all the prospects, and of course, yeah, they all have high bust rates and stuff, but it's fun. So it kind of just depends on your situation.
I want to tie something into this, and it wasn't on the show sheet, but I know I talked again about this with you, Matt. Is there a certain point where you've become so good, or where you're winning more often than not in the league, and you encounter the problem where your league mates think no, or they have a good idea you're one of the better players? So when you try to trade with them, they're almost not even willing to even look at your trade offer. How do you go about that in a dynasty where you're going to have to make moves to continue to win? Lance, what do you do if your league mates are like, I don't want to trade with Lance. He feels like he wins the trade every time. If he's asking for someone that must be good, how do you navigate that?
It depends. If I'm in a league with Matt, of somebody that knows what they're doing, usually we think alike and we can hammer out a trade and get something done. It's the weaker players that generally don't understand the values. Like, I could try to trade three really good players for one exceptional, and this is going to help the guy out for his keepers. And I have to like almost sell the deal as a car salesman to be like, listen, man, this is a great car. It's great, a great warranty. It's going to help you out. But the good players, like, they're really weary because they're already kind of top heavy for their keepers, and they're not going to trade most of them. So especially like a prospect in a dynasty league, people are just really iffy on getting rid of the ones that are hot to start with. They overvalue. I think that ties into what I was going to talk about before, is like prospects of when to sell and buy, like, mm-hmm. because there's the peak where they come up and like they kill it for the first 10 days. You're never going to get more value out of that guy if it starts to go down. But if he starts slow, like, I don't know, Trout might be one. He wasn't very great when he came up. And if you bought low on him, man, you did fantastic. So
I like that. And Matt, you have a method that you do that I thought was really good.
Yeah. And I've heard it from other people before, but in terms of trying to trade, and when people know that you kind of know what's going on, I try, if I'm honing in on a player, I will ask that team if three or four or five players are available and kind of add that guy's name in there. So it's not apparent that I'm looking for that one particular player. I'm interested in five of their players in hopes that they will be fine trading the one player I'm really looking for. I've had situations where, you know, say I'm trying to trade for Owen Casey of the Cubs, a prospect, you know, and I throw out five names and he comes back and he's like, oh yeah, I'll trade these four, but I won't trade Casey. It's like, okay, thanks anyway. Maybe they see through the lines that I just cut off communication. But I think it was Jackson Merrill last year I was kind of looking to do, and it didn't really work out. And then in terms of trying to get trades done when people have an idea that you know what's going on, you're pretty good. I think the number one thing is timing. If you can create a trade where a team needs something at a particular time, their roster is depleted, there's injuries or something, they know, okay, this offer's on the table. I really don't like trading with this team, but I kind of need what he's selling me here. I need these types of players. I need this position, whatever it may be. And they have to consider it a lot more, so they don't take into account your status, so to speak. So timing is a big thing.
I like that. Timing, maybe throw them off the scent, like you're saying, offering a few different players. Mm-hmm. I think those are all really good answers. And, you know, if you get to the point where people are kind of overthinking when they're trying to trade with you, those are two really good tactics to combat that. Talking about trading, what in your mind, Matt, is the ideal roster size / how many minor leaguers should you be allowed to include, aka kind of your farm system? What is there to you an ideal kind of way the roster is constructed, or the setting should be constructed, or kind of are you more in the line of, I don't think there's one set way that works best?
I don't think there's one set way that works best. In my opinion, like I've said before, it kind of depends on who your league mates are, and perhaps how much time they can devote to the league. You know, like if you're super deep, if you have, you know, 50, 70 prospects a team, are people going to be interested in diving that deep? If they love it like we do, absolutely. And that's what makes it fun. You have 50 opportunities to hit on the next big thing. That's exciting. In our particular league, it's 75 players, 10 teams, so 750 players, and there's 25 active or so. So you can, you know, you have your bench players too, but you can get up to 50 prospects if you're kind of rebuilding and things. And like I said, that's pretty exciting. I'm not going to say there's one right way or wrong way, but to me that fits my the way I want to play, the way I want to experience fantasy baseball.
What about you, Lance?
I mean, it comes down to how many number of teams you have, right? You can't just say a number of players, because if you have 15 teams and you've got 40 people on a roster, that's right. A lot. I wish I could say I have the knowledge that Matt does, where I have 75 per team. I don't think I could even name that many minor league prospects, but enough that, like, I would say out of the top 100 prospects, you probably got 40 to 50 of them covered for the most part, maybe 60. Mm-hmm. We had 40 man rosters. We used to be at like 35 on ESPN until we switched over to Fantrax, and then we could just actually put them on our rosters rather than like having this separate spreadsheet that was a pain in the butt to try to keep track of. 5-6 prospects is, feels about right, because you can still have a full lineup to set every day. And most people, again, I'm not in the deep league like Matt where it was that deep, but could at least like go, oh, this is the number one prospect for this team. I should probably keep an eye on him. Or there's news about this guy that's come up, like Franco when he came up. Everybody mm-hmm. knew he was number one. Same with like Vlad Guerrero Jr., you know. So,
yeah, I think ultimately I agree with what you guys are saying there. The last thing I'll kind of close out the show with tonight is we talked about keepers. That was one thing I know you guys mentioned a lot about. Is there an ideal number of keepers that you think should be allowed? I know there's a point where almost it's like you can keep your entire team and then it helps, doesn't help create enough players to pick from. There's also like the fact that you're allowed two or three keepers and it feels like you should be allowed more. Do you guys have an ideal number of keepers that you feel like is a good amount to have? What's your thought on contracts? All those other things that make dynasty fantasy baseball so different. What have you found you enjoy the most? Start with you, Lance.
We had contracts. I loved them, but we got rid of them because owners couldn't differentiate the value of the player versus the contract. This guy could be $60 and be a fantastic player, but I got mm-hmm. this guy that's $10 and is this player. I'd much rather have this $10 and go to the draft and spend that money on something that I can fill in for a decent value. Once we did that, at least it was just player to player. in terms of like how many keepers, like we had 30. It felt a little too deep. Granted, I wanted to keep all my players. I didn't want to send any back, but I also understand if you're, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th place team, not in the playoffs, at least you give them a chance to try to put some semblance of a decent keeper for them. There's some churn. That's probably where I would be. I mean, if you're not getting something out in the draft for them to go, it's hard to build at that point unless you're all prospects. And like Matt said, a lot of them just come in hot and burn out immediately and just don't pan out. So
you think it makes more sense to increase the competitiveness of the league to have less keepers, because that way it allows potentially the power to change more frequently, because you can't just hold on to all the top guys every year.
And defining on what you say is less, like 2 to 3 that you said earlier in the dynasty league would not fly. Like there's no way. You'd basically be redrafting every year. You've got to be able to keep a pretty good core of your starting lineup and probably 4 to 5 starting pitchers. So I would say minimum would probably be like 20 people, I would say, as a keeper list out of 40.
Okay. So your thought, no less than 20, yeah. is a good spot. Matt, what about you?
The one thing I like about dynasty baseball, or at least in our league, is for the most part, you can keep all your players. If you invest your time in researching them and listening to podcasts and all that kind of stuff, this league allows you to take advantage of that, which is what I kind of like. I don't like the idea of finding out about a player and then you can only keep them for a certain amount of time, or at least in our league, you can keep certain players forever. You can have 5-year contracts and then 1-year contracts. And then the one thing that I like is that any in-season pickup, you have to drop that player at the end of the year. And then he goes into the draft pool. So while you may be real keen on picking up the next top prospect or a hot player or whatever, it does allow for those teams who maybe weren't paying as much attention or whatever, maybe mm-hmm. they do get a fair shot at them in the draft next year. So you can't just hoard all the hot players that, you know, popped up during the season. As much as I'd like to do that, I think it does give everyone a fair opportunity to draft them the following season. So I think that's one way to try and keep it a little more even.
Hey, so just to ask, I hope you don't mind, David, if I ask Matt, is for your waiver wire. So for our waiver wire, it used to go by priority. Like if you put in a bid today, it's not until the next morning it would go. When we switched to Fantrax, they made it where it was instantaneous. which sucked because if you weren't on Twitter or something where they announced a prospect came up right away, no shot to get that guy. Like the bottom teams had no chance because they weren't following. How did you guys set your waiver wire up? Was there a priority or no?
So it's a bidding system and it occurs twice a week. It's like, I think it runs Tuesday nights and Friday nights or something. I can't even remember. I'll have to get myself reacquainted.
You guys are contracts and like budgets, right? Like you have a dollar value for the year or something where we didn't, right? It was just whoever bid or put in the claim basically.
Yeah. We back in the day outside of this league, it used to be like that. First come, first serve. And I guess as a younger person, I had a lot more time and I was quick to, you know, I didn't have kids and all that kind of stuff. Like I was on it and that served me very well. As you get older, perhaps you feel that, you know, to give everyone a fair chance, everyone knows Tuesday nights, you put in your bid, you want a player. And that's how it works. Tuesday nights, Friday nights. And then again, if you win that player, you can't keep them the following season. They go back into the draft pool. So I think it's a fair way to do it.
But like, you know, let's say me and Lance both put our bids in on Tuesday night, who would get him?
Oh,
who's got the highest value? So if
whoever has the highest
bid, 10, you get him at 15.
Okay. So you don't do it by like waiver priority. You do it by the FAB system.
Correct. FAB. Yeah. Free agency auction bidding or something like that. I think that's what it stands for. And yeah, if it's tied, if the bid is the same, then there is a waiver priority. That is the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I think it's usually, at least for ESPN, it used to be like who made the most recent waiver claim, I think is what it was. Or you can set the rules of who's the highest ranked team currently. You know, they would miss out. It'd be the lower team that would get it. You can kind of fumble around with those rules.
Yeah. And with $1,000 in the FAB, like you would hope there's really no ties, you know, if it was a smaller amount, but $1,000, anyone could be bidding any number, obviously 1,000 different numbers or whatever it may be. Right. So typically there's no ties, which is nice.
I do like the 1,000 more than the 100.
Yeah. Let's just inflation. Inflation is put exactly. That button up way, way too high.
I want to close out the show tonight with, we were going to do this off camera, but I figured it'd be really good to do it on camera. I think both you guys, I spoke for Matt. He didn't say that, but Matt's team is stacked. And Lance, you said you had a pretty stacked team. I would love to see the comparison of each other's teams. Obviously, you won't get to play head to head, but just for our audience to listen,
go
to
by
both
position.
Teams.
Go by position.
And we'll go by position and then kind of get a sense of who we think might have the better squad. So, let's go start with the catcher position. So, Lance, who you got at catcher?
I have two. I have either Rutschman or Will Smith.
Very nice. Let's a caveat first. Lance's team was only how many players? 40-ish?
40, yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's...
It's hard for him because he's going to have less of the bigger players because 75 people across rosters,
right.
Yeah.
Well, but I'll also have more. Like, there's more opportunity to find
true
players as well. So, as of my team right now, Sal Perez on a one-year contract, Will Smith on a two-year contract, Austin Wells on a forever contract, Samuel Basayo on a five-year contract, Harry Ford on a forever contract, and Dalton Rushing on a forever contract.
Yeah, he's going to be deep with players at 75. Rostering two catchers is bad enough in 40-man rosters.
Six catchers deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in a two-catcher league, you kind of have to invest a little bit to try and get ahead. So, yeah, that's Will Smith. We've got the Will Smith connection. There you go.
There we go.
The Dodgers are going to be blowing up this year on offense. He's going to have a fantastic season.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
What do you guys got at first base?
I suck at first base. This is my worst position. I drafted Christian Walker last year, who was decent. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know, first base isn't as top heavy as it used to be. I also had Manzardo, though, which I was hoping was going to come up this year for Cleveland and hopefully mash. He seemed to do okay in the minors last year. And then I think Brendan Donovan also had first base eligibility, but he'd be more like a utility player if I had to fill in for a day and somebody wasn't playing.
I have Matt Olson and Vlad Guerrero on forever contracts.
Oof.
Pasquantino on a three-year contract and Xavier Isaac waiting in the wings with a forever contract. Hopefully the next few seasons here.
He wins first base.
I mean, I think you had the studs at catcher. He's got some more studs at first base. Let's go to second base.
So I needed steals really bad. I had Bryson Stott. I also had Mookie Betts. And do I have another second baseman? I had Jordan Westberg sitting as one of my prospects out there. I kind of hoped he would pan out. So, oh, and I also have Ha-Seong Kim for the Padres. I kind of like those. I like those like super utility guys that can fill in spots during the week when somebody's out. So, and what were you saying? If I could sell him,
I think he's the player more than any other player I've seen people being like not buying what he did last year. Don't draft him at his ADP and redraft. Lineup got worse, obviously, without Juan Soto there. This was like the time, I guess, in redraft, people weren't touching him at his ADP. That's why I was kind of wondering in the set, like I was referencing and selling him, if like people would buy him just based on what people are saying right now.
I wouldn't buy him if I was somebody out, and I wouldn't overpay for him. But right. With him having three position eligibility for me on a 40 team or 40 man roster, it works great for me. And he's going to still steal bases no matter what. He may not score as many runs, but I basically just want him for utility and stolen bases. So,
right. What about you, Matt?
You're talking about utility. Mookie Betts with probably second base, shortstop, and outfield eligibility this year. So he's, in my opinion,
he's almost like the number one. And you can put him in anywhere in your lineup and just make do anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are super weak at second base. we just scraped by with Ketel Marte on a one-year contract. We just drafted him the other day because we're depending on Colt Keith on a forever contract and Justin Foscue on a forever contract. Nick York is hanging out in the minors right now. So it's not the best position for us at the moment.
I mean, again, you're going to be strong other places, weak in other places. So let's move then to shortstop and what we got going at shortstop.
So I don't know if it still retains, cause I'm looking at my roster from last year in Fantrax because it didn't move forward for this year, but I had Gunnar Henderson again, Kim from the Padres, Mookie Betts, Bichette, and Lawler were my shortstops.
Okay. Pretty young and pretty solid there.
Yeah. Forever contracts, Bobby Witt Jr., Royce Lewis, knock on wood, he stays healthy. Trey Turner, CJ Abrams, Volpe on a 3-year contract. Now we had Wander Franco, not more.
Oh man.
Sorry, bud. That hurts.
Yeah. And then we just got a bunch of shortstops in the minors that we, Jet Williams is kind of the closest one. The rest of them are, there's like four of them in the Mariner system that we're waiting for that just got drafted this FYPD season. So pretty solid though. We're pretty good there.
I think you both have really good shortstops. That might be the first position that you both were like stacked both sides there. Third base.
So again, Gunnar Henderson. I also have Jose Ramirez and Royce Lewis and Westberg.
Nice. Got the Royce connection.
There we go.
Yeah. I don't know why Bobby Witt still has third base eligibility in our league, but I'll take it. Royce Lewis as well. Colt Keith has third base as well. Coby Mayo. We're waiting for him. And Noelvi Marte and Junior Caminero on a 4-year contract. So it would be nice if one of those dudes came up or wasn't taking steroids and getting suspended for 80 games.
All right, outfield.
This will be a lot. Hold on. So I've got Yordan, Corbin Carroll, Aaron Judge, Betts, Randy Arozarena, Jackson Churio, Wyatt Langford, and I had Jason Dominguez before he got hurt last year. So
you had Dominguez as well too, didn't you, Matt?
We did not. We wound up, how can I put this? We had an opportunity to draft him and we decided to trade for Vlad Guerrero way back when Dominguez was draftable, I guess. And we wanted Vlad instead of him. And I guess it's up in the air, but it worked out.
I don't know that I believe in Jason Dominguez, all his skills. I only did it because there was a Yankee homer in our league and I would have dumped him off to him for twice the value once he came up. Like I was going to do great until he tore his Tommy John or whatever and had to have surgery. I was going to sell him easily for what I wanted.
Oh man, that's the worst. Like, you're right, ready to take that person to the cleaners, especially we use their fandom against them, and then injury happens to before you can trade them off. Yeah, that's an unfortunate part with Dynasty. Let's close it out. Or no, Matt, you didn't say your outfielders yet.
I thought Lance was listing off my outfield. Jordan, Corbin Carroll, Evan Carter, Julio Rodriguez, Byron Buxton, Jackson Chourio on a four-year contract, and then just a bunch of minor leaguers. Probably James Wood and Spencer Jones, probably my top ones there.
Nice, nice. Well, then last, let's cover pitching. Go through your pitchers and let us know. This one I feel like is going to be the most telling because pitching staffs are huge here. So
this hurts me. I follow pitcher list a lot, so shout out Nick. But I got crushed with injuries, so I'll go through my IL guys at this point. DeGrom, McClanahan, and Ray are my three guys that got crushed. In terms of people that are healthy, Gallen, Bryce Miller, Cole Ragans, Chris Sale, Zach Wheeler, Corbin Burns, Kevin Gausman, Pablo Lopez, Justin Verlander, Logan Webb, and Yamamoto were my other starters.
Oh, I love Yamamoto this year. I actually rank him as my SP5 this year. I think he's going to be absolute beast.
He's getting crushed in spring training, supposedly, but it's spring training. I could care less what happens until the regular season. So
the three things I look at for him, the velocity's been good, and he's had good control, and the strikeouts have been there. He's been striking out a lot of guys. And from what I was just reading, they said that hitters have basically just been sitting on his fastball because they can't hit his other pitches. Mm-hmm. So that's something I think can be easily corrected. He's just his stuff and his other pitches that he has. They're too good. The break on his breaking pitches, the fastball again is healthy velo. I think it's one of those things, again, they're just waiting on a pitch. So that's going to be one thing the staff will work with him, I think, in the season. Right now, I think he's experimenting.
Yeah,
but again, I'm looking at control. I'm looking at, are they getting strikeouts, and is the velocity something that we should be worried? Like, or is the velocity lower than what it was last year, or what he was throwing in Japan? So he checks every box for me. Obviously, the wins will be there with the Dodgers too.
They got to figure out their defense in the middle infield though. Right now, it's kind of a cluster with Mookie and what's Lux playing second. Like, I don't know if that's going to work out. They're making a lot of miscues in the infield right now.
Yeah, they definitely have to correct that. You're not kidding about that. Matt, your pitching staff.
Without going through the different forever's.
Signed prospect pitchers,
It's just Cease, Darvish, Glasnow, Peralta, Strider, Yamamoto, Bassett, Burns, Detmers, Eflin, Christian Javier, Brandon Pfaadt, Garrett Cole, unfortunately, right now, Shane Baz, Sandy Alcantara, Jared Jones, I'm excited about. Hopefully he gets a shot.
Yeah.
And Jacob Mizorowski, that would be cool if he came up this year. And Ohtani, if he comes back next year and pitches, we have him as a dual player. So he sits in my DH or my utility spot and bats. And then if he comes back as a pitcher, it's added bonus.
Beautiful. Both incredibly good rosters. I love for our listeners just to digest those rosters. And again, when you're as good as Dynasty as both these guys are, that's how you build teams like that. You make trades to acquire some of these players. You draft these players. You hold on to these players over time as you believe in them. And that's one of the things best about fantasy baseball, and specifically Dynasty, is the best teams always win. And so the best players always win. And that's why these guys were here tonight, to give you some of the tips that they use to be successful in their dynasty leagues, and ultimately what help keeps their dynasty leagues going. So that way they can continue to play year after year. Lance, anything you want to leave the listeners with in terms of, it could be dynasty or just anything fantasy baseball related? The floor is yours.
That's a wide open. I feel like we talked about a lot for dynasty. I mean, just follow the people that have the knowledge if you don't have the time. That's the thing. Follow them on Twitter. Watch Nick in the morning. Listen to podcasts. Like, any extra knowledge you can get to get that extra edge can make a huge difference of whether or not you're going to win for the season. So,
yeah, I agree with everything Lance just said for sure. And then I guess at the end of the day, money, no money, just remember it's fun. Mm-hmm. Remember the people you're playing with are actual humans, you know, and they also are trying to have fun too, and all that kind of stuff. So Just have fun with it. Be fair, be respectful. That's what I would say.
Love that. Great discussion with two great people tonight. Make sure, again, I would not think this will be the last time you'll hear them on the podcast airwaves. So keep an eye for these two. And again, great tips from both these guys on Dynasty Fantasy Baseball. If you guys are enjoying this type of content, make sure you guys like and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Make sure you guys are listening on the podcast. 5 stars and reviews are always appreciated. And again, we can maybe do some more Dynasty content in the future. But that's going to wrap us up for tonight. So for Matt, for Lance, I'm David. Catch you all in the next one.